The sleepies.
I'm in rest mode. Just like the earth. I'm in rest mode.
That's how it feels. We did nothing these past 3 days but nap and eat sourdough and smoked meats.
Whoa!
That's it.
You said it was going to be the year of the Hobbit.
I really leaned into it, except I should say I did walk, I did log about 4 miles over the snowstorm because the Nazgul is coming for me. And if I don't walk a little every day, my pacekeeper is going to eat me. And I'm literally terrified of that happening. So I walked some snow miles in my insulated bibs.
Oh my God. Macy's little, what is it called? The Conquer
it's
Challenge?
That, yeah, it's it's the Shire. I'm currently in the Shire, and I didn't have to do this, and I don't have to stick to it. But I didn't realize if you set like, oh, I'd like to do this in 90 days, it creates this scary red pacekeeper thing that just looms behind you at all times. And I realized that I took a day off the first snow day, and then like the second day, dude, I sent you a screech. It was right there. It was right there behind me. And I was like, oh
yeah.
God.
Yeah. It looks like a red, it's some kind of like red applique looking thing.
Yeah.
But we've decided that it is indeed the Nazgul on your tail.
Yeah.
Which is scary as hell.
And it tracks, dude, because I'm listening to the audiobook of it right now. And so as I was walking, you know, they're like making their way to South Farthing. And like, it's the first time that you know, it's the get off the road moment in the book. And like, it was when I was having to directly, I was like, I was only like a mile ahead of the Nazgul. And it came together. Dude, it's so realistic and immersive right now for me. And then I went in and ate a sourdough and smoked beef sandwich.
Wow. What a great time.
I really have enjoyed myself. I napped 2 days consecutively and that was big for
me. Yeah, I can't believe that. I believe it is because you are getting old.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It could be. I was wearing.
Old people know how to nap. Dude.
They do. I envy that. And I also look forward to it. Very much.
I have had a. It's very cold. Very cold. I've been loving it. Loving seeing some white on the ground for the first time in a couple of years, I think.
Yeah, we didn't get much of a winter last year. So this is like this is cold. Like, and it has been below freezing. Today's the first day it's going to get above freezing in a handful of days. But we didn't lose power this time, which was nice. That was a nice touch.
The Texas grid stood up to the test, which is good. I know a lot of people were prepared, and that's good. I love that when just the faintest amount of snow or ice comes around, the southeast just really, oh boy, they just really shut down.
Yeah.
And I understand that it's, you know, it's all relative. I get it. We're not used to that. So we don't have the things that, you know, we don't have people aren't used to that down here. So it's true though. Like all the things about all the memes and, you know, Hank Hill or what is it? It's King of the Hill when like 2 snowflakes fall and people just start immediately getting into car accidents.
Dude.
Like it's true. But everything has shut down. There's no grocery delivery. It's quiet.
Yeah. Dude, we had like an eerie trip to Walmart that we needed to. So, quick little story. We will eventually get started, but I just need you to imagine. I just want to put into words my disappointment. I want to paint a disappointment picture for everyone. And
great.
You know, just love to really start us off nice and cheery. But it's Monday.
Dun dun.
And I wake up, there's there's fucking snow all over the ground. I will say no ice, which has been a delight. Yeah. It is so nice getting snow that has no ice in it. You can actually see like, oh, I can get why this is a fun thing. This is nice. It's 8 a.m. I get a text. Boom. Your internet tech is on the way. And I was like, no shit. Because I'd kind of written that off by that point. Like, I didn't think that they were going to show up. And I was like, holy shit. internet Absolutely. Is coming. Whoa. And like I told Hunter and I was like, if you're not in the loop, he's coming.
Macy's getting that fast fucking internet.
Oh, getting fiber, dude. On Monday. Okay. And it was supposed to be, it was Monday, right? And so Dusty is coming and I get a text and I'm like, holy shit. And so Dusty arrives and it's like Christmas morning, dude. I'm tracking his location because as a little sidebar under thing, I really needed to upload my yoga class because I filmed in advance. For once, I prepared ahead of time, dude. For once.
Okay.
But the snow showed up 12 hours early, so we couldn't go anywhere to upload it ahead of time. And so I was like, great, this is fantastic. But I was like, I could really, oh my God, this could save the yoga class. Shit. You're like, if he comes, this is like a Christmas miracle. And so he gets here and shows up for about a second and is like, all right. None of the shit on the pole is done. So I gotta leave. And I...
Why did he come out?
Well, so it seems that the marketing department got a little bit ahead of the, like, actual execution department, the outside installation.
There had to be something. And they had to be something.
There did. Dude, I expected this. Maybe I manifested this because I'm so gun-shy and I made this go wrong. But anyway, it seems that the marketing department sent out a shit pile of mailers and is like, call us, sign up now. And all of us desperate rural people are like, yes, please. And we did, but they did it too soon. And so they're still having to finish up one last thing because they can't tee it off to my, they can't, like, attach the internet to my house yet. So
that's what they do. They attach it to your house.
They kind of do. They got to dig a whole little trench and run the fiber, and they can't do it because the box that attaches the line from my house to the, it's just not there. They didn't put it there. So
great. Okay, but they couldn't have texted or emailed or called you with this information. Well, they had to send out Dusty.
They didn't know. That was the thing. Dusty was just as disappointed as we were. I mean, it's 2 degrees outside. Oh. He's out here to fucking do it. And then, so it's just like, he told us, he was like, apparently the outside installation team just didn't finish. So they're going to have to come finish. Great. I'm sorry. He was really nice, you know, but I was on the couch listening. Hunter was talking to him because he was off work and he was in the kitchen. And I was just sitting on the couch, slowly turning into silly putty. Just slowly just feeling the numbness enter my body.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Do we have new information as far as what's our ETA for internet now?
If I am being cautious, which I think I should be.
Yes.
At the latest, it should be the start of February, first week of Feb. But it might just be like a week and a half from now. It might be like last week of January. It might be like on my fucking birthday. And then I'm just going to be like, this is all worth it. So.
What a birthday present.
Honestly. So I'm okay with it.
What a great birthday.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry. And I hope Dusty can come out again very soon.
Oh, all of that was to say, sorry, my brain has been just a scattershot mess. All that was to say, I wanted to upload that class because stuff like that makes me fucking itchy. And I was like, well, I don't like that. And so Hunter was like, well, the Subaru has all-wheel drive. Like, let's try it out. And he did snow and ice relief for years. And I was like, you know what? Let's do it. So we went to Walmart. I continued on the tradition of uploading my classes at goddamn Walmart. And dude,
yes,
it was like 5% capacity. It was awesome. Ooh. And I remember being so disappointed because like I was like, man, I wish I was like in the mood to grocery shop because we had that place to ourselves. It was phenomenal. It was so, it was all lit. And so it wasn't like creepy so, with like flickering lights that are like or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it was like we had elbow room and we were, it was so
nice. It was
nice.
In the back rooms.
Yeah. I had a good time.
Yeah. And that's how it works on, if you're not from here, if you're from a place that is equipped and used to dealing with snow, you might not get this. But here, up until the first flake falls, jam-packed at the stores. People are buying a year's worth of water and canned goods and blankets and, I don't know, generators and gas and shit like that. And then it begins.
Yeah.
And when it begins, it's a hard cutoff line. There is no more going out.
Well, and I think a lot of it is we are scared that everything is going to be ice because that's all we ever get. And so really, like when we drove, everything was in pretty good shape. There wasn't, Hunter being Hunter was like, He would tell me, he's like, I just want to test the brakes on this bridge just to see how it feels, you know, and he would kind of like check, you know, but there was barely any slippage really, but it wasn't ice, which was such a treat, dude. It was so nice walking through the woods and it was just snow. Ah, I liked it.
Yeah. It has been nice, but it is over now. But it's over now. Mm. And who knows if we'll ever see it again.
I think we will. I think, well, we might not see snow, but I think February is going to drag its balls over all of us with an ice storm. It's just gonna. It's waiting for it.
All right.
Nothing makes February happier than to do that.
And oh boy, do I love it for it. Mm-hmm. But listen, for all of you, I hate the winter people. It's so close. It's so close. This is like the death rattles of winter. You know, it's throwing one last little hissy fit. At least here, anyway. Some of you dudes, you got to deal with it for a long time. Sorry.
Yeah, some of y'all really do got to deal with winter for a long time, and I can't even conceptualize what that's like. Like, so long. You're just barely in it.
Oh, God. It's quiet and lonesome and gray, and I love it, and cold. Listen, what are we talking about today?
I'm talking about a spice today. And it was a spice I didn't know anything about, which is why I picked it. And today, we're talking about paprika.
Baby spice.
Paprika.
I love paprika.
That didn't sound very convincing, but I believe you.
I'm excited. I love paprika.
I love paprika.
I'm excited to find out how I can use it. Yeah. I love paprika. I'm talking to you. Listen, you guys who are a member of the Patreon and you get those two live streams a month, check it out, patreon.com/WBAH podcast. We live stream, do bonus episodes, and of course, Simp Cap. Anyway, if you guys were present in a recent live stream that we did, I said that I had gone to the Museum of Natural Science in Houston, Texas. Shout out to the H. And listen here, I saw the exhibit with all the gemstones and all the minerals and shit. Mm. And whilst I was there, there was one that just kept catching my eye. Over and over again, I'd be like, God damn it, that's pretty. What is that? Mm. And every time I would look over and it would be tourmaline. And the thing is, I feel like we're pretty used to thinking of tourmaline as a dark stone, like a black stone. And I know we've done a tourmaline episode in the past. However, this particular tourmaline was pink, like pinkish to reddish, sometimes under those lights, you know, those like, it was like a totally stark black room, but with cases in it, with these brilliant lights to like show off all the facets of the gems and everything.
Nice.
But you turn away from the case and you can't see hardly, you know, a foot in front of you, right? So you're just sort of walking carefully from case to case until you exit that exhibit. But it was awesome. But I kept getting drawn to these stones because they would look like anything from this cute kind of almost bubblegummy pink that reminded me of in Zelda, the fairy fountains.
Oh,
you remember?
I always remember the fairy fountains. Dude, I consider the fairy fountains to be like those beds in Elysium. Dude, if you could just go into a fairy fountain, they'll fix everything wrong with you.
Yeah, they'll swirl around you, and then that one creepy, like, big fairy, mommy, will come out
and
tell good things to you.
Yeah.
Yes. but also, there was, you know, and I'd be like, oh, wow, look at that stone, and it was tourmaline. I was like, that's weird. I've never seen a pink, I'm just not that familiar with this type of tourmaline. And then I'd see, like, a blood red one, and I was like, oh, that's fucking metal. What is that? Guess what? It's tourmaline again.
Mm.
So I looked into it, and it is a specific branch of tourmaline known as rubellite.
Whoa! Rubellite.
And that's what I want to talk about today. I also want to, I have a story for you as well. Perhaps this will be an episode that says witchy stuff begins at timestamp. Who knows?
We've been in a snowbernation for four days. You get what you get in this episode.
Yes. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, you take it. No, you take it. I don't know. So in Houston, I got this thing called the City Pass. And it gave you granted access to like a handful of things. The zoo, the Museum of Natural Sciences, the Fine Art Museum, the aquarium, and then like one or two other things, I think. And I was fully planned out. When I go places, I have things planned pretty much to a T.
That's nice.
So I like to create a little chart, a little Excel sheet, and talk about what the weather's going to be like, talk about what my free hours are, talk about where I'm going to be, what it's close in relations to. It's very put together. Listen, it's the only thing I'm good at in that kind of regard. It's the only time I have my shit together. But the day that I was going to the aquarium, I also had made some time to go to a witchy location, a store out in Houston that I actually follow on Etsy. And I know that I have had, I think, something of theirs before. I don't exactly remember what. The place is called Thorn and Moon. And it is one of the coolest little witchy shops that I have been to. If you are near the Houston, Texas area, please check out Thorn and Moon. This is not an ad. However, Thorn and Moon, hey, hit us up if you're interested in, ad spots on Wabah. Send us an email at WBAHpodcast WBAHpodcast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. There we go. And they'll be eloquent, just like that was. But I went, and this was one of the coolest witchy places that I have been to. There's another one out in Houston that's apparently like the staple. They're an institution, and that is, what is it, Magic Cauldron, I think? I could be effing that up. Maybe I'm right. Who knows? But it's like the oldest standing one out there. And I went, and it was great. It was big. You know, they had this gigantic Great Pyrenees laying right in front of the entryway.
My heaven!
He was so big and so lazy.
Yeah.
And it's like, we opened the front door and I was kind of worried. I was like, you can try to run out, buddy. This is at Magic Cauldron, by the way. No, he just didn't give a shit.
No.
And we like had to step over him. And you know how they just kind of.
Oh, yeah. Loafing.
And then there was another. Do they make black Great Pyrenees? Is there such a thing?
Not you. No, it might have been a Newfie.
Okay. It was not a Newfie, but it looked exact. It was just a large, it looked exactly like the Pyrenees, but darker. There were two big dogs that just weren't worth nothing that day.
I love
just
that
laying
for
on
them.
The ground.
I love that
looking
for them
at people
so much.
And anyway, so the store was cool. I liked it. Check it out. But I will say I was particularly drawn to Thorn and Moon. And it is like in a residential area. So I'm not sure how that works business like. But you just rock up to this like old house. They've got the purple door. And they've got this big ass sick pinnacle on the side. Which you know the neighbors. You know somebody's freaked out by that. you rock in. And they've got. It's definitely a witchy shop that leans more towards the like goth witch side of things. Mm. Which I'm so about. But there's so much handmade stuff there, and they've got their own brand of stuff. And then, like, because it's a house, each little room is a thing. Like, the kitchen, the actual little kitchen area is where they keep their, like, kitchen witchery stuff. And then you can, like, step down into the lower part. It's just, anyway, it's great. I'm a zoo person. I am a museum person. And I love, Dallas has the Dallas World Aquarium, which is an aquarium, but it's also got animal exhibits.
It's like a sealed rainforest.
Exactly. Yeah. And they've got this little sloth that you can go see and he'll just look at you. But it does so much. It does a lot of work for conservation efforts. And it also has a lot of education. You know, when you go a place and they have like really fun education, which I have a whole tangent on this later when I talk about the science museum, but like you would get people, listen, please listen, dear God, listen, spread the word. You're going to get so much more enjoyment out of things like the zoo and museums if you read the fucking plaques. I know it's a bummer. I know sometimes it's overwhelming, but read the plaques. Because like I was watching people zip in and out of some of these exhibits and they were just kind of looking at the thing and moving on. And I did that too. Like my first loop around, they had this whole mollusk thing. And I was just like, ah, these are cool shells. Neato. Let's move on. But then I kind of got caught up reading the things. And I noticed like, hey, wait, this exhibit here is mollusks, but like they've blasted away the calcium part of the shell. And all that's left is that sweet, like mother of pearl shit. You know, like the, what is that called? I know we talked about it in the abalone episode.
Does it have a name? Like the, I just know it as mother of pearl.
They're something. They're inner, I guess that pearlescent, whatever it is. Anyway, just. There were so many cool things. There was this, horses way back in the day, because it was the, like, basically, like, the evolution part of the museum, and you're looking at old fossils and shit. I had no idea. Horses used to basically just be the size of, like, dick-dicks. You know what I mean?
That
like,
would be so cute.
Just teensy little things. And, you know, they had a little fossil of them, but from, if you just look at it, it just looks like a boring-ass fossil. Anyway, just please read the things. It's so fucking cool. Anyway, I ended up going to the science museum instead, and that's where I saw the Rubellite, and that's where I'm talking about Rubellite.
Okay.
End of story.
Woo! There it is! Rubellite!
But I wanted to talk about that. I needed to get that off my chest.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you a story. I will say that the other things that I did were fantastic. The Fine Arts Museum
I bet that was awesome.
It was, not only was it awesome, but it was expansive. It was huge. And we saw some, like, really, really, really amazing stuff. And on a, like, they had this, oh gosh, I wish I knew the name of it or who did it, but it's this tunnel that you walk through. And they blast your retinas with this, like, specific type of yellow light that essentially wipes color out of everything. And I didn't notice at first, and I'm walking through and I look down and my hand is like splotchy and gray. And I'm like, what's happening? And I look at my earrings, which are like very vividly colored, and they're no color.
That's
so I like
cool.
Whip my phone out and I'm like looking and I am just completely black and white. And then other people start walking through the tunnel and they're all black and white and we're looking at each other and they're looking at me. And one girl points at me. She was like, you too?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man, I guess. But we're all just like, everybody's passing each other in this tunnel with their eyes huge, like just, wow. It was one of the coolest experiences.
That's awesome.
So, those were awesome. Those were quite cool. And Houston was great. The food, are you kidding me?
Houston has a great food scene. Houston's a very interesting city. Yeah. It's got so many, it's just got such a cool cultural diversification there. And you just, it's really cool. I would like to spend more time in Houston.
It was a really good time. It definitely not doable in the week that I was there. No way are you going to get everything done. Shit. I had to nix a couple of things. I didn't get to go to the zoo, which was top of list because that apparently is great. And super responsible with everything that they do. And I liked what you said about pointing out how like green it is as far as shoving trees in every square inch.
Yes, Houston has a good, especially
trees.
Compared to Dallas, which is a concrete wasteland.
Concrete.
Houston is very nice with all of the lush vegetation that they have all over the city.
I mean, I saw people in like townhomes and apartments coming out and being able to walk their dogs and take jogs in the little like the little median between like the roads.
It's more
like,
walkable.
It's yeah. Yeah. And more like you would want to.
Yes.
Like in Dallas, if you want to walk somewhere, you could, but like
enjoy
it's
your
be,
overpass.
Like, yeah. It's going to be, you know, in like movies when somebody is trapped in the desert and they just see like the heat lines and like fake oases.
Yes.
Like that's what it'll
that's
be.
That's it.
Like. Except instead of a fake oasis, it'll be like an old dirty Starbucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, wow. Oh, man, haven't gone off like that on a while.
We haven't done a good 30-minute intro in a hot second.
Yeah, in a minute.
Wow.
In a minute, dude. But this long-ass, long, rambly-ass episode is dedicated to our Patreon. Mm. Listen, if you want an episode to yourself, check it out at patreon.com/WBH podcast. Today's patron bringing you the show is Robin M.
Robin M. I love the name Robin. I love the name Robin.
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 It makes me think of what it is. Like, it makes me think of a sing-songy little bird.
Yeah, it's nice. And it's and interestingly, every Robin that I know has red hair.
Whoa!
Isn't that interesting?
Huh.
What do you think about that?
Wow. Now in a deluge of, I know a Robin with black hair is coming towards
but
us.
But I like my little perfect, unbroken race that I got going on.
Let us believe that it's some conspiracy theory, please. Robin M.
Robin M wears a heart safety pin to a backpack. A backpack is all that she knows. Shut down by strangers whose glances can cripple the heart and devour the soul. I went to Rock Snake. It always delivers. Yeah.
Oh, Rock Snake always delivers, which we've had some questions. Listen, there is an official WBH playlist out now. We'll either link it or you can find it on Spotify. But we've had questions. People are like, hey, look, where do we get that Rock Snake playlist? And listen, it's not happening.
No, this one's ours. It is the character creation workspace that is Rock Snake and Rocco and Laser. We can't explain it.
We can't show you into their brains.
Yeah.
For they are not agreeing to that.
No. No.
I'm going to talk to you now.
Okay.
I'm going to talk to you here on this episode 282 about Rubellite.
Wow.
Now listen, as stated previously, Rubellite is a form of tourmaline. And to speak on it is to speak of tourmaline. I don't know why I said it like that, but so there is an entire tourmaline episode. I believe it's geared mostly towards the like black tourmaline.
I think.
But just as a little refresher, tourmaline is derived from the word which means mixed colors, which I'm not sure if we said that last time, but this shows that the gem displays a wide range of colors, which I wasn't really aware of. Tourmaline is often referred to as the rainbow gemstone.
Isn't that nice?
Because it's got an incredible range of colors. And it is known to display more colors than any other gemstone. Now, I'm here to talk to you about one subsect of colors, rubellite, also known as red tourmaline, pink tourmaline, siberite, cranberry tourmaline, and strawberry tourmaline.
Those both sound
yummy. It often gets mistaken for, strawberry tourmaline.
Mm.
Sounds like a dessert that you could whip up
yum.
With, like, strawberries. And it just sounds like strawberry pound cake. Mm-hmm. I just want some strawberry shortcake. It gets mistaken for ruby all the time. But it was eventually kind of set aside as its own different thing. And the name rubellite was named by Tiffany and Company. Tiffany and Co.
Ah.
The term rubellite was popularized in the late 19th century, and it was given its name basically purely to just set it aside, just like, these are the red and pink ones, you know. Leave it to a jewelry company to market in that way. In exceptional cases, rubellite can display like a cat eye effect that we know as chatoyancy.
I love that word.
Chatoyancy.
It's great.
I have here I know I, st- oh, let's see. Okay, sorry, I got my notes a little. In even rarer instances, it may display, Rubellite may display something called asterism, which means it forms a star-like pattern on the surface due to the inclusion of needle-like little imperfections that can get in it, and it creates a celestial effect.
Awesome.
I'll talk more on these inclusions here in a moment. The color range of rubellite ranges from light pink to a deep red, with variations of intensity all the way through. And it is comprised mostly of manganese and lithium. And I just love lithium. And it's generally clear. It's got that iced tea kind of thing going on, that it's like sparkly, relatively free of inclusions or imperfections. But when it does, they are usually like these needle-like structures called tourmaline needles or silk. I don't know why those are so different.
Those are dramatically
tourmaline
different.
Tourmaline needles or silk.
Words.
Yeah. I like tourmaline needles.
Tourmaline needles. That's fucking sick. Is pretty awesome. It's pretty cool. I would pick tourmaline needles over silk. Give me needles in my stones.
If Rocksnake knew what tourmaline was, they would have a song called Tourmaline.
They would just, I think they would more likely have a song just because they don't know what it is and they see those two words together and Rocco's just like, tight.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And they think tourmaline's like a chick's name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, some like, mm-hmm. from like, you know, tight. Like, you know, foreign, some different place, yeah. you know, how Rocco would not think beyond
exotic.
Anything. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Gross. I hate him.
He's terrible.
So durability on that old Mohs hardness scale, we get a hardness of 7 to 7.5. So durable.
That's pretty hard.
It is found pretty hard, my guy. Found in locations such as Brazil, Afghanistan, Nigeria, and the United States. It is used quite frequently in jewelry today, and it's great for jewelry because of that hardness. I also saw, because of some of its ties here, we'll get into in the metaphys, to love and stuff like that. You could guess it. It's a pink redstone. It's used in a lot of engagement rings. You know, people are veering away from diamonds, which I love, and it's very cool. Very chonky little sons of bitches too. There is a type of There is something called pleochroism. I think I'm sure. saying that right. Which means that it's basically color switching. When you view it at different angles, it'll switch colors. As Nelly says, watching the candy paint change every time I switch lanes.
Okay.
Anyway,
good,
there's a type of...
good example.
Yeah. Watermelon tourmaline is a specific type of rubellite. It has this distinctive pink center surrounded by a green outer layer, which is usually caused by the presence of iron, but it gives it the look of a little cross section of watermelon, and it's cute and it makes me want watermelon every time I see it. And if you own any kind of rubellite in your jewelry or just as a part of your stone collection, keep it away from the sun. It's one of those that could fade or be distorted in the sun, kind of like your quartzes can do and a lot of other stones. So now I want to talk about something that I think is cool as hell. Tourmaline in general possesses this property called piezoelectric properties, making it unique in gemstones. Piezoelectric, this effect in tourmaline is the ability to generate electric charge when the stone is subjected to mechanical stress or lots of pressure. And this results in a, or it is because the stone has a unique trigonal structure, I guess, in its making, and it allows it to respond to this pressure by squirting out a little bit of electricity, a little bit of voltage for you. And the practical uses of this are huge. It ranges from use in like pressure gauges to, it can change, measure a change in pressure around. And it also, it can be used to make vibrating devices, which I had to look into because I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah, I need a clarification on that.
I need more. So I looked into it. The vibrations play a role in precise timekeeping and energy harvesting. So in biomedical fields, this can contribute to ultrasonic imaging. You can also look to it in technology because it has uses in the production of touch screens, haptic feedback, sonic cleaning, and sonic cleaning. There we go. I ended it up with showcasing its uses in technology, but sometimes I forget to not write my notes how I'm going to speak. I get caught up in my head and then I go to read my notes and I say it a completely different way. So anyway, because of this pyoelectric property, some people have taken that to, like, they've used that in the metaphysical properties. So the way that this stone is special and set aside because it has all of this, people look to it for an even more intense amplification of intentions and a more intense spiritual connector, like use it as a more intense spiritual connector. It's thought to facilitate a deeper connection to higher energies, your inner wisdom, spiritual guidance, and the piezoelectric effect is also thought to create a conductive energetic environment for when one wants to look inward, to introspect, to meditate. Now, history. The name rubellite is derived from the Latin word rubellus, meaning reddish.
Okay, there you go. That makes sense.
Reddish.
Okay, reddish.
I like to think of just some like Latin speaker being like, it's kind of reddish.
Reddish.
Let's go with that. Yeah. Rubellus. It's reddish. Historically, tourmalines were confused with rubies. We've already been over that. Ancient civilizations such as the Egyptians, the Romans, and the Greeks, you know them, they valued tourmaline for its unique colors, its, you know, pretty clearness. You can see a lot of color out in nature, but very rarely is it like this clear. You know, usually got to polish up stones to make them brilliant, but this can be one of those like naturally brilliant stones if, you know, cut into whatever. And they believed it to have protective properties. There's even something called the legend of the fiery heart.
Nice.
Where in these ancient cultures, there is a legend that rubellite represents the fiery heart of the earth. It is said that wearing rubellite can ignite the flames of passion and bring warmth to one's emotions. Cleopatra herself had a fondness for tourmaline, including and perhaps particularly the red and pink varieties, and often had her jewelry made with these stones. In the 1500s, Portuguese explorers discovered vividly colored tourmalines in Brazil. That's right. It's the rubellite. And this gem, gained popularity in Europe. Can you guess why? Can you guess why that this became the popular choice for jewelry in the 18th and 19th centuries and was often incorporated into Victorian and Art Deco jewelry designs?
It made your dick hard.
Oh, I hated that laugh. Probably a little bit of that, but also we had that the classic case of royalty.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Showing it off.
Okay.
Queen Elizabeth II received a necklace from as a gift from the people of Brazil, and it showcased the beauty of these rubellites. And from there, it really just popped off. And little factoid, Guinness World Record for the largest cut rubellite belongs to a stone that they've named Red Emperor. Ooh. And it weighs over 20,000 carats.
I get confused on carrots.
Modern. I I always think, wow, that's so much. And then I look at it and I'm like, oh, it's just a palm stone.
Yeah, it's just like a little guy.
I think 20,000 is pretty substantial.
That sounds big.
You know, like those big fuck off quartz?
Yeah, that sounds really big.
I think we're talking like big boy. Because the fucking rubellites I saw at the museum, those that they had in the cases were not this, what was it? Big, I scrolled away. Big red boy. What was it called? Big fat red? Red emperor. the ones I saw were
big,
like the size of a thigh.
Big fat red.
Big fat red. You know. But no, I mean, really, truly, the ones that I saw there were large, you know, the size of a Christmas ham.
Whoa.
I guess. I said my thigh at first, but then I was like, I don't know. Modern jewelry. Rubellite is having a bit of a revival in modern jewelry because it is being used increasingly in contemporary pieces. Now, I think it is perhaps because of the whole engagement ring thing, people kind of veering away from the diamond. It is being used in a lot of rings in particular, which is sweet. I think people are looking for gems that are very durable and hard versus what we saw kind of rise to popularity a few years ago. I feel like a few years ago, like pearl was very popular for like engagement ring and kind of softer things.
Yeah, I mean, my ring is a rose gold and aquamarine, and both of those things are way softer than like a gold right. band with a diamond. Like I gotta go. I'm like you know, you get it checked because right. of the warranty or whatever. But like I go get it checked every time because like I'm worried yes. that it'll get soft and wiggle out.
Yeah, is it soft yet? Is it yeah. has it been made into more? But it hasn't. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Thanks.
So, rubellite, alternative birthstone for October. Mm. It is a little bit more spicy, a little more vibrant, a little bit more colorful for someone seeking an alternative to opal or the regular I think the regular is it black? Tourmaline, I think that's October's person. And anyway, I know opal is. Anyway, so the history, or I'm sorry, magic, metaphys. Let's get into the metaphys. Let's, everybody shut up. What can rubellite, is that what it's called? Rubelline? Rubellite? What can it do for you? Protective and grounding. It's your fault. Protective and grounding energies. A lot of people still hold to the old belief, the old ancient belief. One of the earliest beliefs about the tourmaline is tourmaline. Why do I keep saying tourmaline? Is it guards against negative energy, but also brings good fortune. I also saw a few places say that it creates a shield against negative forces. And this is not the first time that I have seen the word shield be used in relation to this. There's another one later, but it's very Bella's power in Twilight when she becomes a vampire. It can also help you stay connected to the present moment and provides a very strong foundation, perhaps for grounding, times that we need to be rooted, times during stress or emotional upheaval. It can also help to soothe and balance our emotions. And getting into a little bit of the lovey stuff here, it can promote our feelings of love and compassion. Does not have to be love and compassion in like a sexual or romantic way, but it can even help us kind of see things from another perspective. It can help to soothe emotional wounds and promote forgiveness, or perhaps maybe amp up some compassion that we need to have towards others or even ourselves. And it's very introspective. It's an introspective stone. So while promoting the love and compassion, it also helps us to connect with our inner wisdom, which I think is very important if we are looking to perhaps promote forgiveness, or maybe we're in the spot where we're like not there yet. Like we're like, I know eventually maybe mm-hmm. forgiveness is going to be on the table. I'm open to it, but I'm not there
yet. Sometimes that's the way it is. It takes time.
Yeah. Sometimes you know it's going to happen and you want it to happen. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying forgive everybody. There are times, mm-hmm. right? But like when you know, I love this person. I don't want to, this is not like I'm cutting them out or anything like that. You know, it's a tiff or whatever. Mm. I'm still pissed off. It can help you look inward and just promote that forgiveness and compassion.
Forgiveness.
So historically, forgiveness. I hate you.
You've been saying it so much. I've tried to not say it. Like and then I just, it just finally slipped out of me.
Oh no, I didn't even fucking think of it, Maisie. I feel like I'm just over the last time you did that. Historically, the stone was carried by travelers as protective talismans, as it was believed that the gemstone could create a shield against accidents and misfortunes during a journey and safeguard people on their adventures.
Hmm.
The stone will stimulate your creativity and your artistic expression. Invigorate the senses. No, inspire the imagination. And what I like here, this is really cool because we see a lot of stones that are like, it's good for creative, it's good for artistic, it's good for inspiration. This will help to encourage original thinking and inspire like I don't want to say an overactive imagination, but like an awakening of the imagination in an original, innovative type of way. So this stone is a favorite of artists, writers, anyone who is doing something and you might stop and have that moment of like, I'm a fucking fraud. Have you ever been halfway through writing something that you think is yours and go, oh, nope, that's a song that already exists? Or, you know, you think you're coming up with this great idea and then halfway through you're like, that's the plot to Titanic or, you know,
I'll
whatever.
Do that with like turns of phrase and things like that or like examples. Yeah. And then I'll have to remember like, oh, no, that's not from me. That was somewhere else. I yeah. need to remember yeah. that this yeah. is not an yeah. original yeah. thought.
I do it so much and it starts off original and then I think I just get lazy and I'm like, oh, and then this thing could happen and then I'm like, oh, hold on. I'm stealing. and lastly, the stone. I'm plagiarizing. And lastly, this stone can amplify positive energies and intentions, making it really valuable in manifestation. So not only, it's not so much that the stone will transmute negative into positive. It's just, it's double faceted. It will help protect against the negative while taking any positive that is already there and amplifying it. So we're not like switching out, but we are kind of batting down the bad and flaming up the good. Mm. What flaming out?
Flame on!
That's the word I'm looking for. Fuck. Wow. You're really full of them today.
I am.
But that was rubellite or rubelline or whatever I have mistakenly called it a few times. But it's rubellite.
Rubellite. Nice. I like that word. Rubellite.
Yeah. Rubellite.
Rubellite. Feels good. It also sounds like a song or a sound that like a cute toad would make.
Like Rubellite. Rubellite.
Rubellite.
Rubellite. It does because it's spelled R-U-B-E. It looks a little bit like Rubellite.
Rube.
Like you're a bumpkin.
Fucking Rube.
You're fucking Rube. I love the word Rube.
Rube. Man, I've not said that. I've not heard. I've not heard or said that in a touch. But I do, Rube.
Rube.
Oh, dude, I'm nervous. I'm like looking at my notes, and I know we did this last week, but just because I've been such an absolute just couch slug the past few days, just sustaining yeah. on blankets and bread and bad Sasquatch TV, I don't even feel like my brain and can handle any of this.
Smoked meats
and smoked meats. Yeah. Ooh.
Don't forget that smoked meat.
But here we go. Let's do it. Let's talk about paprika.
Forgiveness.
It's more than saying sorry.
Ugh.
Have you, and I ask you, Charlie, and you might know, I did not know this. Have you ever wondered,
yes,
as you were throwing back your 15th deviled egg, what that red, what that red powder on top, what it is? Like, what's it made of? What is paprika?
I knew it was paprika, but I have no clue what paprika is. Is there a paprika nut?
See, that was why I wanted to do this, because I was thinking about it. I was like, what the fuck is paprika? Like, is it, what is it, you know? And so I'm going to tell you.
Is it just a fancy pepper? Is it like a mild pepper?
See, you're getting warmer here. You're actually, that's
getting to it.
That's
getting
pretty
to it.
Hot. That's it. And I didn't know.
Oh.
Didn't know that. And I've always like mini, especially if you just kind of have that grocery store paprika. I've been a bit on paprika for most of my life. I recently did come across and really enjoy. I like me some smoked paprika. I keep that in the house now because smoked paprika.
I was gonna say, you gotta eat that fucking smoked paprika, but you gotta put that. Ooh, you gotta put that on that deviled egg, dude. I want deviled eggs so bad.
I know, I know. Saying. Deviled eggs. Ever since I did these notes when it like earlier, and I've wanted deviled eggs for days. I've wanted them for days, dude. It hurts.
Give me that fart smelling goodness.
Ugh.
Yes.
And so I didn't know anything really about paprika aside from the fact that I love the color of it. It's a pretty red color, and it's maybe the color that got me thinking.
Do you remember? Do you remember there was a lady who got popular on YouTube, and this was back before, I think before even Vine existed, and she had this like cooking show that I think her nephew like filmed, and she like would always be fighting with them, and you know, she would be like, here, I'm going to show you how to do this. I'm going to show you how to. And oh, I can't even. But one time she took this big bag of like chicken wings and she just dumped them in her sink. And she starts like throwing some spices on and she's like rolling them around.
That's
getting
upsetting.
Coated in the sink.
That's
which everybody,
awful.
What?
That's,
yeah. Everybody freaked out about it.
Yeah. It's the dirtiest
and
place
I think
in her house.
In her next video, she was like. And the next video, I think she was kind of like, okay, because everybody wants to freak out about this. But I remember she threw on a butt ton of paprika and she claimed that shit's just for color.
Well, a lot of the time, though, it is especially like because we're going to get into there's a whole world of paprika, dude. But a lot of times your grocery store grade paprika that we have here, which we're going to get into that in a little bit. Oftentimes it is just used for color. It's added to barbecue rubs oftentimes for color. And of course it has a flavor, but you get more complex and diverse flavors as you branch out your paprika palette a little bit. Get a little bit more worldly with your paprika.
Paprika palette.
Paprika,
paprika
palette.
Paprika palette.
And
paprika palette.
You would think when you look at it, that it's going to be a spicy boy. You know, it's bright ass red powder. Mm. And a lot of the times it's not. It's kind of earthy in a way. It's and not really coming at you. Mm. And you would especially think so if you know what it comes from, which is, like you mentioned earlier, red peppers. It's coming from red peppers.
Whoa.
So first off, I want to kind of clarify. So paprika is kind of a nebulous combination of peppers, generally from Capsaicum annuum, which is a group of the pepper family with species originating predominantly in Mexico and South America. Includes bell peppers, Anaheims, Edgevarskis, cayenne, chili peppers, Fresnos, a whole bunch more. As well as it seems, there's a pepper that shares the namesake, Capsaicum annuum. And that confused me a little bit. But anyway, that also seems to be the family, too. I'm not a botanist. I don't know. I struggle so much, many much. And
you're not Nicholas Culpepper.
I am not. So paprika as a spice is a blend of these various peppers from this group. And there's no set like law, it seems, on what exactly paprika is to contain. So that said, three main camps of paprika that we can look at here to better distinguish what's going on. So what's the first? Sweet paprika. Sweet paprika.
Ah, sweet paprika.
And this...
You'll get caught up in the sweet paprika.
Mm-hmm. And this is... It's just going to loop in my head the rest of the day now. It's great. This is your general...
Yes.
Grocery store McCormick's Red Cap brand paprika. This is regular ass paprika. It's mild. Mainly, it's made of red bell peppers. And it does still yield that rich red coloring like a lot of the counterparts in the whole paprika family. And this is your deviled egg paprika. So often you're using it, dusting things again, mainly for coloring. But listen, in the realm of paprika, you can only go up from there, which actually gets me excited. I want to try some of these other paprikas because you know what we've got? Hungarian paprika. It's a big deal.
Oh, okay.
It's a big deal.
Tell me.
So, paprika apparently is a pretty big deal in Hungary, apparently. And I have an excerpt that really concise. This is from thehungarianpaprika.hu. So this is a Hungarian website that I translated to English.
The Hungarian... Paprika?
Yeah, the Hungarian paprika.
Is the name?
.hu.
Okay.
Yeah.
The
Hungarian, right. Yeah. So, in the beginning, yeah. I love that it starts off with in the beginning. Anytime anything right starts off with in the beginning, I'm in.
Yeah.
In the beginning, Hungarians did not use paprika as a spice, but more like ornamental. So the peppers would be, this is me talking, the peppers would be displayed, like strung up as like status. Like, look at these peppers I can afford, but not eat. And ever since, though, the 16th century.
But not use.
Yeah, I don't really know. But the 16th century is when this plant began existing in Hungary. But again, mostly it was decoration of like for nobility. Back then, paprika had a completely different name, although historians are not completely sure what that was or how it managed to reach Hungary in the first place. By analyzing various sources, one could conclude that paprika arrived from the East, Turkey, to be precise, since some of the older names for paprika are related to the Ottoman Empire. Other historians regularly name Portugal as the true source or true origin of paprika. After the Turkish closed many of the essential trade routes, Hungary was looking for a new spice that could replace pepper, which led to a rapidly growing demand for paprika from the West. Since the beginning of the 18th century, paprika has become much more popular. Not only it was able to give a nice flavor to meals, but paprika was also much cheaper than pepper. So it became a popular spice for both rich and the poor.
Oh, I love it when the rich and the poor can come together.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh, no, you can have a nice thing to make your food taste good. And that shouldn't just belong to us because we were born into a lot of money.
Only we have salt.
Oh God, that'd be so depressing. So apparently,
dude, can you imagine? Okay, just cook your dinner tonight with no seasonings and just imagine.
And this is like the paranoid sometimes, especially when I'm like when I'm in a real dooming state of mind, you know, really dooming. I'm like, man, at least if everything collapses, it would be a hike. It would be a couple days trek, but we're not far from that salt mine and I could go get some salt.
Listen, it's the little things. It's the little things.
You need salt too. Like you got to have it. And so it's like, I always think about that. I'm like, we would have to like load up and like do a expedition to go get some salt.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to go to the Morton's factory.
Go down in a scary elevator and rickety my way down.
Oh. And then pick up a mining thing?
Is it a hunk?
Pickaxe?
And is it like a salt lick? I would just maybe just keep some on the counter that I can just lick every day.
It's a big salt lick.
Yeah.
It's a big salt lick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd do it. Sounds kind of fun. Cows look like they have a great time licking that salt lick. They love it.
Dude, I would lick that salt lick until I went cross-eyed.
Yeah, man. be delicious, especially with if it's, it's the end times and seasonings are like far gone. Dude, just sit and zone out and just lick that salt block.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And just be like,
hurdle yourself towards hypertension as quick as you can. Yeah. Just lick at that salt block.
There's no medicine left anymore for this.
So apparently paprika is also what the peppers themselves are called in Hungary. So it's like paprika is made out of paprikas. I don't know if it's plural or not, but you know, you get what I'm saying here.
Oh.
Yeah. And according to the same site, again,
it's like that sentence that if you say buffalo like seven or eight
like
times
buffalo,
in a row,
buffalo,
it's
buffalo,
technically...
buffalo. And that blows me away.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm going to have, I don't know about half of the meanings
I don't either.
Of that, but.
Like I said earlier, you got paprika is a big deal in Hungary. It is the national spice, in fact, of Hungary. And it seems there are like within Hungarian paprika, there are 8 sub varieties of paprika in Hungary. And none of these I can pronounce. They've got like dots over the A's. And like I read them all and I was like, there's no fucking way. But they all have different notes going on. Some with sweetness, earthiness, spice, etc. So there's different colorations. Some might be a bit more of an orangey or yellow, some a deeper red. So they're different blends, which sounds, I would love to get a sampler of these. I'm a sucker for spices, dude. Mm. I give it to me.
A spice sampler.
Oh. And however, there are 2 prominent dishes in Hungary that really display this spice, that really put paprika on a pedestal. One, Hungarian goulash, baby. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
ooh.
Interestingly, Hungarian goulash to me looks like what we call pot roast. And I wasn't aware of that. Mm-hmm. It's like potatoes and carrots and like a good gravy-y kind of beef meat situation that's all stewed up in that gravy. But they put a lot of Hungarian paprika in it. And there's also paprikash, which seems to be served with chicken often, but it looks fucking delicious. It looks so good. Hungarian, everything I was looking at, I was like, I could do this all day. This looks delicious. It looks so good.
Dude, you had me at Hungarian pot roast or goulash.
I know that goulash is a word like that. Goulash is something that has been like taken and ran with. Like our family has a goulash recipe that is not this, you know, but anytime I hear the word goulash, I know it's going to be good. It doesn't matter what it's like. It doesn't matter where it's just, you know, it's going to be goulash. Come on. It's going to be fucking fantastic.
Goulash. It's goulash. It's warm. It's inviting. You will be satisfied.
Oh God. It sounds so good. I'm starving, dude. I've not eaten yet today. And I am hungry.
I'm very hungry. Very hungry.
So, which is great because we're going to keep talking about spices and food for a while. So moving on from Hungarian paprika, we have our third variety, Spanish paprika. So shed a few layers of clothes. We're leaving Central Europe and we're going down to the Iberian Peninsula now. We're traveling to Spain. And we're going to talk about pimentón because pimentón, it seems, is what Spanish paprika is called in Spain. Highly utilized spice in Spain, apparently. Kind of ubiquitous in Spanish cuisine. It's just kind of makes its way in everything, apparently. And as I understand it, it is pimentón that your grocery store smoked paprika is like, that's its daddy. That's where it came from. Because what makes Spanish paprika what it is that they use smoked peppers smoked over oak wood, and it sounds so good. But that's where like your and I was and I
so sweet
I love
to
it
me.
Dude, and I was reading up and there was
dude, you know, that's what paprika feels like. It's like a smokiness.
Yeah. And like it was neat reading, you know, opinions.
It's like smokiness encapsulated.
I love, because I love a forum We all know I love a good forum, and I found myself in a forum of people talking about paprika and people who were familiar with the, you know, they have tasted Hungarian paprika and the different, and there was a lot of people saying
a forum.
That I love a forum, dude. They'll never die for me because you can really, because you know who's using forums? Nerds. They know their shit a lot of the
nerds,
time.
Everyday people.
Fucking nerds. And a lot of opinions were, you know, you get a definite, some people say it's too, they don't like the smoke. It's too smoky. They don't prefer the smoky edition. So, you know, you get your different, but any smokiness, again, I've sustained on smoked beef for days. Give me a smoky flavor. I'm in. I'm really looking into the logistics of smoking a sourdough loaf just for experiment. I just want to see if I can do it. I want to see what happens.
Oh.
Yeah. Who knows? Okay, okay, you know? Okay. And so
could be delicious.
It could be delicious. I'll probably leave it covered. I'll leave it covered for a lot longer, and I'll use like the, or just like base level lodge cast iron, so it's not going to get like smoke ruined, because I've got my mom got me like a beautiful little red enamel Dutch oven, and it's what's got me bacon again, but I wouldn't want to put that in the smoker and just immediately make it brown. But I want to do it, dude, and like uncover it maybe the last like 5 to 8 minutes.
Fuck you, mom.
Yeah, and just be like, oh, you got me this nice expensive food. Look what I did to it for an experiment. No, I treat it like a precious,
wow,
a precious baby. But I'm going to try it, and I'm going to keep you updated and see how it goes. I'll need Hunter's help to like.
I hope you do.
Help me operate it and get it, keep it hot enough. But I'm going to do it, okay? I'm going to do it.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, that Oakwood smoked paprika, that is what inspires the smoked paprika that you find in your grocery store. Because I have a hard time believing that you're just run of the rail. Your smoked paprika is oak smoked chilies. I don't believe. But, you know, this is where the idea came from, you know.
I don't. You're suspicious of it.
I don't trust it. But like, dude, it just got me thinking, man, like, how good must some paprika be that you are tasting paprika that was made where it has been grown, smoked, and ground all in the same location and like made fresh. Dude, I can't even imagine how good that shit is. I bet it's so delicious.
Yeah. I bet it'll knock your socks off.
And here we've got to talk about Christopher Columbus.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he makes his way in here a lot, but directly relevant in this case,
I guess.
Because we got to remember that these peppers were not just growing willy-nilly in Spain. No, no. These were New World peppers from Mexico and South America. And, you know, the exact same places that Spain was over there plundering at this time. So it was the removal of these varieties from North America and bringing them, and South America, some varieties, to Spain, which injected these new peppers into Spain, and eventually the drying and grinding that led to paprika. And as the story goes, which we get to that a little bit when talking about what led to paprika, but just put a pin in that. As the story goes, though, and this is from the Smithsonian, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah, I tried to find this because this seemed to be a lot of times it was like a legend. The legend goes. And this was the most fleshed out account that I could find. So when Christopher Columbus returned from his second voyage to the New World in 1496, he brought a special gift to Ferdinand and Isabella, the royals who financed his journeys, paprika. Well, to be more accurate, he brought them capsicum peppers, the ingredient used to make paprika. He brought them from South America, and although, the legend says, Ferdinand and Isabella thought them too spicy, the duo handed them over to the monks at two monasteries, the Monastery of Yuste and the Monastery of Santa Maria de Guadalupe, who began to cultivate them in the 16th century. Families living near these monasteries in Extremadura, Spain, began to grow the peppers about the same time, drying the vegetables in smokehouses on wooden racks to create a smoky, colorful spice that took the country by storm. And that got me thinking.
Wow.
Because everywhere, like, so all of these sources, everywhere, it was like the origins of paprika are Spain and Hungary, Europe, essentially. But I was like, that can't be true, considering what we know about the civilizations that were growing these peppers before colonization. I was like, I just don't buy that.
Right.
Like, they definitely...
Somebody took that.
They definitely made this first. Yeah. And even though it's not commonly presented on the timelines as because, like, so often it's like the creation of paprika is, like, credited to Europe, because after the injection of these peppers to Europe and that was when it hit the culinary mainstream because of colonization. So it's like, that's when it was made. But that's not really the case, because people of Mesoamerica were super understanding of these peppers that they had been cultivating and combining and creating spices and blends out of for generations. And with that, we're going to start kind of making our way towards the metaphysical side of things with the story of Chantico, she who dwells in the house, who is a domestic goddess from Aztec spirituality. So
that's tight.
Here we go. So Tonacacehuatl was a fertility god who ruled over Aztecs, ruled over food sources, as I understand it. And with that power, Tonacacehuatl would sometimes declare fasting times, we need to abstain from this, we're going to not have this, or during these days, we're going to fast or whatever. And during which time, Aztecs couldn't eat certain foods. And sometimes, they had to abstain from anything at all. And in one instance, Tonacacehuatl ordered another fast, during which it was said no one was allowed paprika. You can't put that on anything. We're abstaining from paprika. However, Chantico, the domestic, or this deity of the, she who dwells in the house, this domestic goddess, she prepared her roasted fish and decided, I'm going to put my paprika on this fish.
Hell yeah,
because
bitch.
I really like paprika on my fucking fish, okay? And so that's what she did. And so she did. She ate her fish. She had a great lunch, is what it sounds like. She had a really good lunch. Tonacacehuatl was big mad, though, upset with this.
Okay.
And saw it as a deliberate act of disrespect, because it's like, listen, I told you not to eat the paprika, and there you went and put the paprika on your fish. I just said. And, there she went anyway. And so he decided to punish her by turning her into a dog. And it seems that, and again, I don't know a whole lot, so I'm not trying to, be an authority here and just be like, it's too, but from what I can understand just from a few examples of this and just kind of little notes and being turned into an animal is somewhat of a common, normal punishment, I guess you can say, in Aztec mythology. It happens, and
it depends on what kind of animal for me, like whether or not I'd be disappointed.
Oh, turn me into a dog today. I'll take that, man.
I mean, today, sure. But like, are we talking about like a wild dog? Are we talking about like a dog without a home?
I don't know.
That's a rough
I assume, and again, talking out of my ass here, but being the goddess of the hearth, being a dog almost makes sense. And I did see, and I don't know if this is true or if this is just something, I don't really, but I did see it's like that's, kind of a part of the legend as to why dogs like to lay close to the fire, because goddess of the hearth turned into, and so, it's like the dog's close there by the hearth.
That's cool.
Yeah. But, I really liked this story, and the non-taming of Chantico, because I mean, she's of the hearth. She's fire-based there, And even though like Tonacacehuatl was like a very powerful god, much more powerful than her, she was still like, I want my seasonings and I will not compromise. And she had her seasonings.
What a bad bitch.
Yeah. And anyway, I just wanted to tell that story because it seems that for some reason, the existence of paprika is credited everywhere else from where it actually originated before colonization. And again, it might have become globalized following that and spread around, but it was made for a very long time before that by people that knew so much about these peppers, that made these peppers what they were, so much so that it was integrated into the mythology. So on that note, let's get on into the metaphys here, full on. And guys, we're talking red peppers here. We both picked red things. I like to think it's because it's so cold. We've picked warming things.
Cute.
It's interesting.
I love that.
But you know where we're going here. Use your imagination or don't, because you don't really have to puzzle it out, because we're talking about warmth and we're talking about passion. It's red. And
banging.
But what I like here about Paprika, and this might just be me here. I didn't necessarily read this anywhere. This is my vibe. This is a vibe I get from Paprika. So just to clarify that, talking out of my own brain folds, but I feel like it's a good middle ground for what spice can bring to a spell. Because maybe you're wanting to do kind of that expediting extra kick, you know, like when you're doing a candle spell, you can throw a little extra something, something on there that's got some like a spice element to like heat up this spell and be like, let's get the wheels moving. Let's kind of give this a little extra oomph. But maybe like, maybe cayenne sounds a little too ASCII, if you know what I mean. Maybe you feel like it's a little too demanding to be like, by the way, chop, chop spirits, okay? It depends on what you're doing. I use cayenne in spell work, but it always depends on what I'm doing and the reasoning. And sometimes I want a little bit of a heating element, but maybe I don't want it to be something that's just like, boom, do it, please. So I like that. And this is just how it feels to me.
Chop,
of course. I don't know. It's just, I would put it near cinnamon, except maybe a little bit higher just because of the red, you know, just, and the peppers. And with the color, you got
a little hot, a little spice.
You got color magic, you know, we got to talk color magic.
You can't ignore the color magic.
Seeing red again. That's all I could think as I was doing these notes was just Chevelle. And Paprika, it's red. It's beautiful. You can't miss it. Now, if you're branching out and you're looking for other varieties of paprika, some that we've mentioned, you might see a variation of colors there, a little orangier maybe. But they're all generally very much still in the warm spectrum. They're in the warm tones. But if you're wanting to channel red, like red, paprika can be really great for that. Like, I know the little jar of smoked paprika I have is comedically red, almost to the point that, again, it makes me suspicious. It's so red.
Yeah. You're like, what is wrong with you? How are you going to make me sick?
Are you just smoke-flavored red plaster? Like, I wonder sometimes. I don't trust anything anymore. And
red plaster.
And I like this, though. I like this for channeling the color red, especially in food, because as someone who has an issue eating spicy foods because it irritates my bladder problems, this is a way to like add a good red chili looking spice that's still a way more mild, you know? And so if you're irritated by spice for whatever and this is something I've noticed for me, is that like I can usually rock with paprika and it's not going to flare up my interstitial cystitis. Whereas like if I eat a couple spicy dishes in a row, my bladder's pissed for a little while. So it's nice to be able to get these red things if you want like a little kick that's not going to, you know, like suck.
Chew your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, this just got me thinking, and I don't know why I put this down here. And this is just, I was thinking of the story about Columbus bringing the peppers to Frederick and Isabella and them being like, this is too spicy. And it just got me remembering some of y'all with that black pepper jerky up at Otahana's, and it cracked me up all over again. I just couldn't help it. That made me so happy.
Aw.
I love it. It made me, you know why? Because as someone who can't handle any spice, I got to feel so smug for a hot second. Like, I got to be like, I'm a Texan and I can handle about a 4 on a spice level. Look at me.
Yeah. I feel like me and you looking around just morphed into Hank Hill.
We did. Absolutely. We were both kind of like, amateurs.
Suddenly got real shitty and cocky.
Yeah. But I say that last night I made a sourdough pizza and Hunter was like, can we put some pickled jalapenos on it? And I was like, I don't know about that. And he was like, they're not hot. And I ate one and then stared at him as my body turned into flames. So am just an asshole. Paprika is associated with Mars. Makes sense. It looks like it could be dirt from Mars. And if you work with Mars, if y'all hang, or if not, maybe you're looking to reach out, paprika can be a good offering. Paprika can be used to represent the fire element, or again, be a good offering to the element of fire if you work with the elements in that way. Paprika is warming in nature. So any spells that could benefit from a little warming essence could be good candidates for paprika. Listen, maybe you're meeting with your potential in-laws for the first time, right? Mm. And you're not trying to insert some like hot fuck me energy, but you just want some gentle warming energy. Again, this is what I was saying earlier. Yeah. Sometimes you don't want full kick, right?
Or I don't know.
You're not, you might, but assuming you don't want the energy of trying to be a third to your future in-laws, it might be a good idea to dial it back a little bit.
Whoa. Yeah. Hot fuck me energy.
Yeah. Yeah, man. You know the type.
All right.
You've done it. You've been there.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
But, gentle warmth, help that ice break a little easier. You don't want to fall through on thin ice. Well, you like all my sayings that I'm throwing at you, but use it as an icebreaker. There you go. And paprika, it is passionate, however. It's a passionate spice. And again, that doesn't mean it's passionate like peener and veener. It's not necessarily talking about fucking passion or however it is, but the warming.
Peener and veener.
Yeah. Peener and veener. You know. Yeah. It could.
Or veener and veener.
Veener and
or
veener.
Or peener and painter. Or peener and peener and painter.
You could, whatever. That's the thing. Add eener to the end of it. And you're done.
It's the new Ussie. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, Ussie. I still think about the Yussie for yarn so often. Every time I think of it.
Whenever I see one flopped out like
that. I'm just like, look at that. There it is.
Thanks a lot.
But maybe you're trying to rekindle love with a hobby or an interest. Ooh. Maybe you're trying to tap in, to what it is that truly makes you passionate. Maybe you're trying to explore that. Paprika can be a good addition for candle spells or however it is that you would like to manifest messages or knowledge of this in your life. And I have an example of this. Something that's come up a lot for me lately from multiple different sources is painting. Picking up painting again, but doing so not with the intent to be technically impressive to myself, paint with emotions and feeling and expression, and don't worry about so much of what I'm painting, but what it feels like to paint it. And there's only been a couple of times in my life I've ever let myself do that, because I usually get caught up in taking the piece too seriously and trying to, I always get there. So I'm trying to manifest more carefree, passionate expression in my life. And we can do magic for shit like this, because that's the beauty of being a witch. And so
magic.
It got me thinking about a passion bowl. And as I have a little spell to share, if you want to do it.
Hell yeah.
Maybe you don't. And I was thinking, so my example is for painting. Okay. But you can do it for whatever it is that you are looking, to expand your passion in. But maybe in a bowl, I could put a scrap of canvas, because I always keep raw canvas. Maybe I could cut a piece of canvas in there, maybe a lid from a tube of paint that, I don't need anymore and it won't dry out. Maybe I can peel a piece of paint off of my palette that I have and put that in there, but get that paint element kind of thrown up in there. I can add a brush in there. A brush head, if I don't have a big bowl. I can put sigils in there, runes if I want, Wunho maybe for joy, just the joy of expression that I'm trying to create.
The joy of expression, the joy of painting with Bob Ross.
See, he was onto it. He got it. He told us. He was just trying to tell us.
He was there from the beginning.
I grew up watching Bob Ross, man. Dude.
Ugh.
Love.
Listen, I don't usually fall for
feel like I go along with the, I don't know. He's, what I'm trying to say is he's one of those people that everyone loves that I'm also like, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very pure.
And I'm not like generally suspicious of.
Yes. Nope. Just painted beautiful pictures and talked very sweetly while he did it. And I can listen in this passion boat, throw a couple rocks in there. Maybe you want some citrine, maybe some red jasper in there to kind of help bring those intense feelings of stress and perfection you might feel into more of a balanced state, kind of primed for just expression, for just doing it, just getting it out, you know? And then once I've assembled my pieces in this bowl, I want to dust them all with paprika. Just dust all over the top, coating these elements, sealing them a bit. All of these elements of art that I'm trying to manifest and do, and as well as metaphysical beliefs such as rocks and runes all mixed in, seal it in with this layer of passionate, warm, simmering energy to help lift all of these components up to where I want to be and where I want them to be. And this could be customized for whatever hobby or passion or interest you're looking at dusting off or resuming or picking up for the first time. You know, if it's crochet or knitting, maybe some yarn trimmings and like a safety eye or something in there that you can throw in, just little things that you use that are just elements of it. Or if it's witchcraft in general, maybe it's a tarot card, you know, a rune, a candle, a crystal, a bundle of herbs, whatever it is. But once you assemble it, maybe seal them with that dusting of paprika and kind of to bring that energy into what it is that you are looking at allowing yourself to express yourself in. But anyway, that's paprika. And I hope y'all learned some stuff. Again, I went into this not even knowing it was peppers. So I learned a lot about a spice that I usually can kind of take or leave unless it's on that 45th deviled egg that I am sucking down as fast as I can. But anyway, there it is. I'm done now.
Paprika. It's not always hot fuck me energy.
It's for when you don't, for when you might not want that. Hot fuck me energy. Yeah.
For when. All right. Wowee. I guess that's all we have for you today. How do we end this show? I don't remember.
I don't know. I'm so hungry. And it's so cold back in this room that that's all I can think about. But we do need to end the show like the 6 year running people that we are, almost 6 year running people that we are.
Okay. Well, I guess if we need to do that, thank you for listening to the Witch Bitch Amateur Hour. I almost forgot the name of the podcast.
Fantastic. Great.
Listen here. If you'd like to support the show, we have many ways for you to do that. Become a Patreon at patreon.com/wabahpodcast. Be a part of our Patreon shout out. Get access to extra content like bonus episodes.
The whole and other podcast that we Facebook do group every single week.
And monthly live streams to SimCap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right now, we are covering MILF Manor.
Oh my God.
But you can listen to our whole backlog. We've got Farmer Wants a Wife. We've got Bridgerton, or Queen Charlotte, a Bridgerton story. We have our little shorty boys called Wimp Caps, where we talk about Bear Grylls.
We've got all of Cushiel's Darts over there. If you're a
book
person and you want to get into that story. We did do Anastasia. I loved doing Anastasia. We did Road to El Dorado, which was a lot of fun. We cover something every week over there. I truly, SimpCap has become a deep love of mine.
Yeah, SimpCap is one of my favorite things in life. And that is the $5 a month level. So for $5, you get the Simp Caps along with a few other little things at that level.
Nice.
So if you are wanting to advertising inquiries as well as your spooky sode entries can be sent to wbahpodcast@gmail.com. Remember, if it's a spooky sode, put spooky in the subject line. We have a Facebook at
Witch Amateur Hour, but you can just search the Witch Bitch Amateur Hour.
We have an Instagram.
That's Witch Bitch Amateur Hour.
We have an Instagram, and that, you got it. We have a Twitter or an X. I
think
I don't know.
I think it's dead.
Still?
I think it's dead over there, man. I mean, I never used it in the first place, but from what I can read in the memes and online, I think it's a, I think it's just a dead place.
I don't, yeah, I don't really know what to do with it, but it's there. I don't know if it's there. We also have exciting news that we are waiting on the tips of our little toesies, on the edges of our seats for, because Macy, when Dusty, Rusty comes on out and hooks you up with that sweet, delicious,
oh my God,
tit-licking fast internet,
uh-huh,
we're going to be able to do a few things.
Yeah.
We'll have perhaps a YouTube channel where you can watch us record these episodes. Perhaps we'll get back up on OnlyFans or something like it, where you can watch us do this live and get all the behind-the-scenes content. I don't know. We'll do gaming and stuff.
I can't wait.
So please, stay tuned for that. And as always, your handwritten letters are actual literal magic. We have a P.O. box. That is P.O. P. That is post office box number. Macy, what number is it?
865.
Canton, Texas, 75103. How was that for semi-professional?
Fine to me. We got it across.
Yeah, man.
We've got the print coming out here just around the river bend. It's coming.
Winter print.
For everybody.
Winter print.
Winter print.
It's gonna make your shivers timber. Ooh. Cold snow, tits, ice, snowflake, Christmas.
And to
winter.
Those of you that might have missed a print in the past,
I thought you were going to come out and be like, we're reprinting.
Oh, never.
Like, dude,
never,
you don't rule.
Never, never. If you are a collector of the print, and you know what? Maybe along the way, maybe you've missed one. And maybe that keeps you up at night. Listen, I get it. We're not going to reprint them. However, we're going to do something a little bit different this time. So, with the launch of this winter print, we are going to carry what we're going to call raffle tickets. And these raffle tickets will come with a digital order number, which will be put in a list. And at the end or the closing date of the prints, we don't know what it is yet because we don't have the print yet, but it's coming soon. We will draw X amount of raffle winners. Again, we will decide what that's going to be. And you lucky randomly picked winners will be able to pick a print that you missed. Now, we've got a little stash of previous runs. We're never going to rerun them again. We're very firm on that. At this point, we couldn't be more stubborn. But we've got some backlog. And we thought, you know what? Maybe every now and again, we can open the vault and give the chance to, I don't know, plug those holes, your print holes that you didn't get.
Plug up your print holes.
And
Because listen, we understand shit happens. Sometimes you miss a print. And if you're a full collector out there and you're missing that one, ooh, baby, there's no worse feeling. So we're skirting the rule, but don't you dare think we're going soft.
No.
We're not printing ever again.
No, we're never printing again. But let this go for one of these, you know, like we've in the little box. You know, I was going through them the other day, and I got to say, there are like two of them that just have like one left. And once that one's gone, it's gone. So, but like, we could do this now and again, be like, you missed that one. Here you go. You can get that one. You can pick it. And then we'll get in contact or whatever. And then we can ship it to you. So just know that's going to, because there's two of you I know for a fact that are only missing one. And it devastates me for you. I just want you to know that.
And honestly, because of such limited quantities that we do have left over that we overordered for, we didn't think it would be fair to just be like, oh, I saw this one person post about it or a few people post about it. You know, so I think the raffle ticket makes it a little more random, a little more fair.
Yes.
So that's, you know, we don't want to be assholes.
No, we're leaving it to chance here. But anyway, that's coming. We'll keep you all updated on the winter print. It is a coming soon.
Yes.
That's all I've got. I need to go eat me some soup beans and cornbread.
All right. Go eat you some soup beans. I'm going to see what I can douse some paprika on.
Ew. You know what?
I love to think that you just went, ew.
Ew. No, my soup beans have smoked paprika in them, so I'm right there with you, brother.
You're goddamn right. You're goddamn right. See you next time on the Witch Bitch Amateur Hour.
Bye.
You need a little pick-me-up.
What the fuck am I going to do for this song?
I thought you were going to say, what the fuck is a pick-me-up?
What's a pick-me-up?
Just get real angry and confused.
Fuck a pick-me-up.
Tell me what a fucking pick-me-up is.
Okay. What am I going to fucking pick?
Oh, that really got me.
I'm just panicking, scrolling through playlists.
Oh, man. Oof. It's so dumb. Okay, ooh, wow, I'll light a candle. Okay, fucking sin.
All right, I think I'm ready. I think I got one. Right. I think I got one that'll work.